It's 10:01. We're all in our places with bright, shiny faces. So we'll call Paul. We'll start with you, Paul. Paul Fearer, by the way, is meeting with us today from Stanford University Human Resources Office. That was posted on the agenda. And Paul, are there any members of the public? And I would also welcome Sally if she's there. But other than Sally, is there anyone with you today?
Just Angie from Covered California.
Great. Hello. Hi, Angie.
Hi.
So we have Paul is present. Veva Eastless. Marty Morgenstern. And Diana Dooley. We are all here. We have a quorum. Are there any conflicts that any members need to disclose based on the agenda that was publicly posted? Seeing none, we will be meeting in closed session for approximately 3 hours to consider contracting, personnel, and litigation matters. We will reconvene in public session at approximately 1 o'clock, and we currently estimate that the open session will conclude by 3 o'clock. We are going into closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 100500J to consider contracting matters, personnel-related matters, and potential. Perfect. Okay, I think we are connected, and I would let you know, as with last month, Paul Fearer is participating at the Stanford University Human Resources Office. Paul, has anyone joined you there from the public? Do we have public members in Palo Alto?
Yes, one individual.
Good.
Who's here to listen, I guess.
Okay, and if your member of the public wants to speak, if you would just be sure to flag me, because I can see people here that want to speak, and I won't be able to do that. So we appreciate your being with us there and the availability of the public to participate in Palo Alto. We do have a quorum. We took the roll, and we asked for declaration of conflicts. There were none. We get to my next script here. I think this is where I go to Peter. But, oh, I think we have minutes to do. Down. Now to Peter. Sorry, we rushed in. I was trying so hard to start at 1:30, having delayed again, but there's so much to do and so little time. But Peter Lee for our executive director's report.
Thank you very much, Diana. So the board met in closed session for many hours, actually, and it's because we have a number of critical contracting issues, including discussions of the health plan contracting that we are in the midst of, and that's something we talk about with the board in closed session to inform staff's work with the new and potential future plans that may be considered for admission into Covered California for plan year 2016. With regard to action items, I'm going to run through a dozen items that the board acted on. First, the board approved our issuing an RFP for readability and cultural linguistic appropriate material development, focus groups, and the like. That's going to be a public RFP issued soon. Second, the board approved the amendment of our contract with RHA, Richard Heath and Associates, through June of 2017 to help staff work with our navigator and other partners. Third, the board approved a renewal of our interagency agreement with the Department of Social Services to process appeals for Covered California through June of 2016. The board approved an update of our interagency agreement with the University of California to support both the CalSIM work they do, which is the work to estimate subsidy-eligible individuals, but also the underlying work done by what is called the California Health Interview Survey. That is one of the more robust surveys in the nation to understand populations, health issues. A number of the questions of that survey are specific to Covered California to help us understand our populations. We provide financial support to that survey as well as to the CalSIM work. Next, the board approved amending our contract to actually have a support for postage. Up until this time, postage was paid through our contract with Accenture. We no longer do that. We directly fund Novatex to pay the postage. It's all budgeted expense, and it's a lot of budget because we do a lot of mailing. Next, the board approved our issuing a request for proposals for project management services to support Cover California's operations through June of 2017. Next, now you do understand why we were meeting for so long, but anyway. The board approved our amending our contract with the Pacific Business Group on Health through June 2017, June 2018, related to the Evaluate tool, which is the tool in particular through which we get assessments at each certification, recertification period on plans, activities, and areas such as health disparities, diversity, as well as a whole range of other quality dimensions that are part of the key elements we look at in our certification process. The board approved our amending our interagency agreement for the oversight and management of CalHERS between OSI, the Office of System, single-year sort of capacity for the peak period temporary contracts. The board also discussed personnel matters. One personnel matter that I have the privilege and sadness to announce is bittersweet, which is to announce the impending retirement of Mr. David Panish. Exactly. It deserves a big awe. And I would actually, after I remind you what David has done, I would ask for the board and those of us who have worked with him to give David a round of big applause, which is, as many of you know, first, David has 35 years of state service. Over 3 years with us. He has been with us since January 1, 2012. He has a reputation in Cover California in particular of hiring among the best staff out there that frequently gets stolen by other departments. He has been an incredible contributor to a number of our strategic initiatives to work with the legislature, with advocates and others, to make sure when we say we partner well and thoughtfully, David's embodied that. He planned and launched our original stakeholder advisory groups and has helped shepherd those. California has been a model, we believe, of engagement with partners from a range of forums, in large part because of David's good work. He is also a singer and songwriter and a great conch blower. So with that, David, we so much appreciate your service. David's with us through September, but thank you so much, David. Now, I do want to be clear. The staff standing are not in applause that he's leaving. It's in applause for the service. We have a remarkably good team of which David has been such a vital part of, and it's been a real pleasure, David. Thank you.
Peter, before you go on with your executive director's report and in the personnel-related actions of the board, and certainly personally, I would add my deep appreciation and respect for David, and I'd hope that he won't be going far away and that we'll have access to his great intellect and talent in the Sacramento community. But we also had a discussion in closed session that we are not required to report, but in the spirit of transparency, I want to share about the transition from startup to operations. We have come a great distance together, and we continue to be laying the track as we're running the train, but we're getting to a point in our evolution on a number of levels where we are looking at long-term sustainability and operations, and it's a point of great pride. One of the things, as those of you that have been from the beginning know, is that the enabling statute required a salary survey for the compensation. And we have looked at that many times. There was an initial salary survey done. It created very broad ranges, and we've used those as reference points in the establishment of compensation for our executives at Covered California. And we have changed our model. We've changed descriptions. We've had three chiefs. And in the meantime, we have evaluated on the basis of the old salary survey and the performance particularly our two top leaders in the executive director and the chief deputy executive director. And we reported last year that we made a one-time bonus adjustment for the executive director, and we did that again today as an extraordinary expression of the appreciation of the success and his commitment to the organization to have been our startup leader as well as a commitment to stay and help us move to this operational level. And we're deeply appreciative of Peter's leadership, and we're very happy to recognize his work. We have also made a base compensation adjustment to the Chief Deputy Executive Director, Yolanda Richardson, who has also made remarkable contributions to our success at this point and has also made the commitment to remain with the organization. And the two of them together are a tremendous team and asset that we feel compelled to secure and recognize and acknowledge with these two adjustments to their compensation, that their base compensation is reported regularly, as all compensation is for the members of the staff here. But I did want to put it in the context and to give an update on our ongoing effort to be sure that our compensation policies and practices are consistent with the enabling statute that gave us the flexibility to operate a little bit differently than some other state agencies. So, Peter, I just wanted to make that acknowledgement both about the compensation, but also to you and Yolanda on behalf of the board, how deeply we appreciate all you've done and your commitment to help us get to that steady state that we will certainly discuss as we go through our budget today for an ongoing, sustainable organization.
Thank you, Diana. Thank you, the board. I mean, this is a labor of love for many of us. I feel personally, I know Yolanda does, but I know, you know, we have 1,200 staff at Covered California who are committed to a mission that we think is helping change healthcare in California and serving as a model for the nation. So I very much appreciate both the financial recognition, but more importantly, the opportunity to serve. So thank you very much. With that, I want to go to a brief overview of what's coming up today. In the executive director's report, we'll talk about a very high level of some of our new contracts for advertising, public relations, an update on special enrollment, small business. And then I'm actually going to spend about 15 or 20 minutes telling our story. We're now 18 months in to providing coverage in Covered California. And in doing this, it's sharing with people who come to board meetings the story we're starting to tell more on the streets. And so we're going to spend 15 minutes doing that. It won't take long, but we do have a very, very good story to tell here in California. And we're collecting data from a range of points. We don't tell this story in any sense thinking there haven't been bumps along the way, and there won't be more challenges to come. But we as a state should feel very proud about what we're doing for Californians, and so I'll be doing that. We have one action item before us. The agenda said we might have two, adjusting our current year budget. We had bar to talk about using data that can understand the risk mix of those insured. We used it last year in such ways that we believe reduced the rates paid by Californians by over $100 million. And that's by giving health plans the information to better understand who's insured. Second, there was substantial coverage of the action that many of you were part of, taken at the last month's board meeting, to cap specialty drugs, as well as to have a number of other changes to make sure as much as possible drugs are available regardless of people's health status and condition they have. That coverage was because it was the national news. We're the first state exchange to take that kind of action. It's leadership, the sort of leadership we like to see. The other thing I'd highlight is research that we have in our board material. I know all of you have a lot to read, but I want to call out six pieces of the 12 cited in our material. First is an Urban Institute report talking about the fact that over 9 million Americans are having fewer problems paying their medical bills. That's directly because of the work we're doing within Covered California and the expansion of Medicaid. Second, an Urban Institute report noting that most adults with medical debt had health insurance when that debt was incurred. And this is important when we talk about our standard benefit designs and the role of deductibles in them. It's the case that many that go bankrupt and did go bankrupt before the Affordable Care Act had health insurance, but they had Swiss cheese coverage that didn't cover them when they needed it. So that study is important to understand the value of our benefit designs. Third is a health affairs study on our hospital networks. This is a study in health affairs in May of 2015, finding that our networks were narrower but very similar to networks in large employers and better quality. Kaiser Family Foundation study on the uninsured and coverage expansion and the impacts in California. You'll see some data on my presentation in that, but I encourage you to look at the full survey. It's an independent survey looking at the impacts on the uninsured, Medi-Cal covered, California covered, and those with employer-based coverage. Next, a Families USA study on non-group health insurance and how many insured Californians are foregoing needed care because of high out-of-pockets. Again, think about that study in the context of our standard benefit designs and what we've done in California to reduce those barriers. And finally, a study by the White House Council on Economic Advisors on the consequences of state decisions not to expand Medicaid. This state, with the leadership of Jerry Brown, expanded Medicaid. Millions have been insured. Millions have access to quality care because of that. And it's important to remember what's different about California. That's one of those examples. With that, let me turn to the other update items. First is advertising and marketing. We issued a press release yesterday to announce that we have issued or selected a firm by the name of Campbell Ewald, working in partnership with four firms with deep experience working in targeted ethnic communities, or three firms, excuse me, to do our next round of marketing. Their clients include Kaiser Permanente, UNICEF, others. Get enrollment across the diverse population of Californians. We owe them a debt of gratitude and appreciate the work we've done with them. And we look forward to the next phase with Campbell Ewald. Next, announcing that we have a new contract with for communications and public relations with Ogilvy Public Relations. They also have subcontractors with specific expertise serving African American, Asian language media, and with those two in particular, as well as the Latino community. This is on earned media. It's a substantially smaller contract than we've had in the past. We now have a team at Covered California that do communications, media work regularly and well, but we will still be relying on them for help on open enrollment and other media issues. They've been a good partner already and won the competitive process to continue in that role. Next is on special enrollment. As you know, we are in what's called the special enrollment period when anyone cannot get coverage through Cover California. You must have a special qualifying event. I'm trying to advance. The main news here is that we are not, by a long shot, closed for business. Our doors are open. Since open enrollment commenced in February 23rd, we've had almost 130,000 people enroll in Cover California. That's 25% more than our forecast, which is substantial. Of that, about 42,000 came in because of the extended period we have for people that were newly informed about their tax penalty. But the vast majority came in for the quote-unquote normal special enrollment reasons. In particular, the biggest reason by far is people lost their coverage, primarily through losing employer-based coverage, but potentially from losing Medi-Cal. So this is just a reminder that special enrollment is a at-scale operation in California. 130,000 people that have newly been enrolled is a lot of people. We continue to do this on a daily basis. We appreciate the work of insurance agents, navigators, and our service center, which every day continue to enroll Californians in getting coverage they need. On the small business front, as you know, we are not SHOP. We are Covered California for small business. We rebranded. If you missed it, get on the boat. So within Covered California for Small Business, we're at slightly over 17,000 members, group size on average of 6.6. The main thing I'd note, and this is really the message to agent partners is we've been cleaning up getting payments out for commissions. The vast majority of sales in the small group market is through agents. And we've shifted our processes to get payments to agents out faster. We're almost caught up with payments submitted to the controller's office. They get they turn them around in about 5 days. And we're doing this not just because it's the right thing to do, but as we get ready for fall. This fall is going to be the major opportunity time for significant growth in the California, Covered California for small business. Next, I would note on a board calendar, two things I'd note. First, there will be a meeting in July. So, again, there are a range of ways we are steering the ship of Covered California. The board meetings are important venues, but the advisory committee meetings are vital forums for discussion, debate, and helping steer what we do. So thank you, those of you that are members of those committees, and also those of you that actively participate otherwise. So with that, I'm going to actually go through what would probably take less than 15 minutes, or well, maybe 15 minutes, updating you on our story. And this is an important story to tell. And the framing of this is that Covered California is not just seeking to expand coverage. Our goal is to deliver on the triple aim. The triple aim has been framed by Dr. Don Berwick and many others, but it's a threefold aim, an aim of delivering better care, having a healthier population at lower cost. That triple aim is baked into our mission, into our values. And we seek to deliver on that promise through doing four things, through being an active purchaser. We don't sit on the sidelines. We embrace the fact that the board has charged us with actively crafting a market that works for consumers. We do that by effectively reaching consumers, by providing affordability, both in terms of premium and in terms of out-of-pocket, and making sure people are actually getting care at the right time. So that's the platform upon which we're seeking to deliver on the promise. Now, I'm not going to run through all the changes of the before and after the Affordable Care Act, but I do think it's important to remind all of us that Covered California and the Medicaid expansion are parts of dramatic shifts in the health insurance marketplace, including guaranteed issue, including health plans being required to spend 80% or more of the premiums on health care, including kids, so to speak, up to 26-year-old being on their parents' policies. These are total game changers of the insurance industry in America. Those changes are integral to the Affordable Care Act. They're integral to our success. How have we done? Well, you know, we're a numbers organization, and it's important to think about Covered California in the context of how we've changed California. This chart is hard to read, but we provided copies and feel free to use them. But when we talk about changing healthcare in California, Covered California with Medi-Cal have reduced the number of uninsured almost in half. Many of those remaining uninsured are undocumented. But in doing that, we have continued to have a very robust individual market that's grown instead of shrunk. The employer market is very similar sized. I would note that this data, I actually have seen other data that conflicts with it that notes that the employer market is about the same as it was. But it's a remarkable change to have more than 3 million newly covered people in California and those with coverage having better coverage and the assurance that if they ever lose their job, they will not be out on the street without health insurance. That's a major change. What's that mean for us? And you know at our last board meeting we talked about this, but increasingly you will not hear us talking about enrollment figures. You'll hear us talking about covered lives, those that actually have insurance today. Today, 100,000 Californians that don't have coverage today, most of them, we believe virtually all, and we're doing surveying to nail that number, now have coverage with a job that they now have employer-based coverage or in Medi-Cal, but for whether it's 2 months or 10 months, had coverage through Covered California. We are the glue that is making the employer-based system, the Medi-Cal system work. These are big and important numbers, and it shows our impacts are not only big, but set us up on a path for long-term viability. We're about to act on our budget. Some of the things that set Covered California apart from other states is, one is our scale. We're big. Having 1.3 million covered lives means that we're collecting a lot of money on our plan premiums as a share of that, which we did from day one. From the first day we opened our doors, we were putting money in the bank in unrestricted reserves for ongoing operating. The budget that the board will be acting on today is a $335 million budget, which is a break-even budget for this year, for the next year, using the last of our federal establishment funds, about $100 million, and the balance in fees we'll be collecting from our plans next year. After that, the next fiscal year, we'll spend about, we estimate, $30 million of our unrestricted reserves. After that, we'll continue to be cash flow positive. And if we need more resources, we can dial up our per member per month plan assessment or dial back our expenses. But at between $300 to $330 million operating expenses, we are a very going proposition. How have we got there? Well, the number one way we've gotten there is by enrolling a lot of Californians. But more than just a lot of Californians, we've enrolled Californians that reflect the diversity of our state and the diversity of those eligible for subsidies. So on the right-hand side of this chart is the percentage by ethnic group of subsidy-eligible population for Covered California. 38% Latino, 34% white, 21% Pacific Islander, 5% African American. In last year's open enrollment, we enrolled 37% Latino, 18% Asian, 4% African American, 34% white. Not exactly matching the subsidy eligible, but pretty darn close. And I note in particular in Latino enrollment, with challenges of many who had never previously had insurance, we, and when I say we, I do not mean by a long shot just Covered California. I mean insurance agents, I mean navigators, I mean community groups, I mean health plans that were in every community of the state did a very good job. That number of enrollment was validated by the Kaiser Family Survey, which actually has better demographic data. 30% or so of the people that sign up don't tell us their race or ethnicity. The Kaiser Family data gets it from everyone. They found 37% of those with insurance were Latino. So we've done a good job. We're getting people in. Now, we are not a competitive state, but we want to explain how we compare to other states. So, and this is for frame of reference. It really isn't competitive. At the end of the first year of open enrollment, California had 100 and 120% of those eligible in that income range have signed up. Now you say, 120%, how's that work? If you have no option and you drop below 100%, some think many people are taking extra jobs, are doing everything they can to keep their coverage. It's rich coverage. It's big benefits. It's good news they're getting them in. But I want to sadly remind us all that the good news for the Floridians who got coverage through their exchange masks the fact that probably 2 million plus people in Florida have no health insurance today because that state did not expand their Medicaid program. So when you're looking apples to apples, compare California and what we have done with our Medi-Cal program's expansion as well as our exchange and the dramatic expansion. We think that we continue to do a good job, and we look to where we can learn from other states. So that gives you some sense of comparison in the numbers. Next, we say often we are not just about getting people insurance cards. We want to make sure people get care, the right care at the right time when they need it. The investments California is making in our clinical analytics are big investments. They're actually unique investments. We don't know of any other state exchange, and right now the federal government are not making similar investments to understand in future years what is the experience of diabetics across the state. Are low income getting care differently than higher income by race, by language, by ethnicity? We'll have better answers to that in the end of 2016, in 17. We have early indicators today, though, that are very promising. That people in Covered California are getting the care they need when they need it. So one data point is from Kaiser Family's survey done in fall of 2014. which was 3 months before the end of the year. As of that point, they were asked, among other questions, and I encourage you to look at all the questions in their survey. Were you able to find health care locally convenient to you? Well, in Covered California, 91% said they could. Now, I can imagine some headlines. 9% of Covered California enrollees cannot get local care. That's the exact same number of people with employer-based coverage. And that said, we need to look at those 9%. Why is that a problem? How do we address it? How do we fix it? But the fact that Covered California enrollees have an identical experience to those with employer-based coverage is good news. Second, on are people getting care? Well, as of fall of last year, 60% of our enrollees reported having received preventive services. 70% had received care. Statistically, that's the same as employer-based coverage, the same as those in Medi-Cal as well. So this is actually good news for the Medi-Cal program, good news for Covered California in terms of people getting access to care. Now, I'd note that the asterisk, we actually spoke to the folks at Kaiser, there is no statistical difference between the employer-based service numbers, the Medi-Cal, and Covered California. There is a statistical difference between each of us and the uninsured. So 60% getting preventive services? Yeah, I'll tell you. When we have our own clinical data, we're going to be able to go to Plan X and say, you're at 74%, you're at 82%, what are you doing wrong? But these are early indicators that are very promising. That mean among, though, is actively shaping the benefits. We worked with consumer advocates, with clinicians, with actuaries, with health plans 3 years ago to set up standard benefit designs. Under those standard benefit designs, the bronze plan that we have, which is the bronze note, is standard across every single one of our health plans. And you get 4 visits a year not subject to a deductible. 1, the preventive service, and 3, outpatient visits. In 2016, those 3 visits could be for a primary care provider or a specialist. That's one of the changes we made in 2016. Not subject to a deductible. Above bronze, everything in blue on this chart is not subject to a deductible, which means that basically anything except for going to the hospital is not subject to a deductible. So when you think about studies and reports that talk about consumers avoiding care because of catastrophic plans and high deductibles, not at Covered California, where we have standard designs that say deductibles will not be a barrier from you getting outpatient services. Now, do we have work to do to educate consumers about their benefits? Absolutely. That Kaiser survey found that 75% of our enrollees felt they understood their benefits. 25% didn't. Do I believe that? I'm not so sure. We think we have work to do to help educate consumers about insurance literacy. But we have a platform to educate them and make sure that they get the right care at the right time. That's being an active purchaser. So what's that mean concretely to affordability? First, it means that 77% of those with subsidies in Covered California are paying less than $150 per individual. Now, if you make a little bit of money, that's a lot of money, $150. But 120,000 of our enrollees are paying less than $10 a month. Many of them are in bronze. Many have made the considered choice to take their subsidy and buy a bronze plan. We want to make sure those are informed choices. But it also means that for the hundreds of thousands that have enhanced silver products, they are both paying low premium. So in the what's called our Silver 94, the policy for lowest income individuals, not only are half of them paying less than $50 a month for their premium, what do they pay when they go to the doctor? $3 for an office visit. They have zero deductible for anything in that benefit design. This is transformative. This is a standard design that's touching people's lives. Now, I would note that same Kaiser family study said that 44% of our enrollees said that it was a struggle to pay their premium. Well, for these individuals, it's a struggle to pay their rent. It's a struggle to put food on the table. That doesn't mean they're not paying their premium. And it's very important to note, making care affordable has not made health care in America cheap. But we're bringing it within reach. Let me take you on a very brief tour around the country. The other thing we do as a purchaser, standard benefit designs, and potentially limit plan options. We think that's the right thing to do. In Los Angeles, there are 7 silver products available from our 6 carriers that offer plans in Los Angeles. One of our plans today offers both the coinsurance and copay option. This means that products offered in states that do not have active purchasing have a lot of product offerings, but many offerings that could easily lead consumers to make really bad choices. Okay, and we put some numbers around this. In LA, we priced the experience of a family of 4 with parents 35 years old and 2 kids, making $70,000. In every one of these states, that family would get about $200 as a subsidy. About $200 as a subsidy. What would be the premium against which they would use that subsidy? Well, in LA, a premium of from $450 to $650, meaning they'd pay $250 to $450. Well, in Denver, the premium ranges from $600 to over $1,300. Okay? In Miami, $500 to $1,200. All the same actuarial value. These are all 70% silver plans. But some of them have zero deductible. Some have $10,000 deductibles. Some have deductibles that apply to some outpatient, some not apply to outpatient. It's an absolute zoo. What's it mean? It means that in Colorado, over 42% of the people there picked a bronze plan. Now, I can tell you that's bad. That is many people, consumers, leaving subsidy dollars on the table and not picking a cost subsidy program in silver because there's too many options. They're confused. Many more also pick gold. Probably not a good choice as well. Probably not understanding the silver benefits to them. I would also hazard to guess that some consumers in Denver spent $1,300 for a silver product and got no more insurance value, but spent a lot more money. Similarly, in Florida, many more consumers picked silver, probably because of those low-income consumers that get big subsidies. But again, are they making right choices? We don't think so. California, by being an active purchaser, is helping consumers get better value. And finally, and this is important as we go into negotiating, as we are, we don't just negotiate price in California. This is reference to what is still my favorite part of our standard contract terms, Attachment 7. I would note that Attachment 7 in our standard plan contracts is one of the reasons we were able to hire Dr. Lance Lang. He said, you know, forget what you'll pay me. The fact that you've laid out how you at Cover California want to change delivery and make sure people get the right care at the right time was why he wanted to join this organization. This is something we're going to be discussing with our plans next week when we spend a week in negotiating to foreshadow how we will be seeking to raise the bar in 2017. We look forward to discussions in our plan advisory committee meeting around these issues. We want to make sure people do get the right care at the right time. That's what we're about in California, and that's what we look forward to doing in the years to come. So I appreciate your tolerating that. This is an important story to tell. 18 months into what is going to be a very long journey, but California can and should feel proud about what we've done to date. With that, I'd take questions from the board and then questions or comments from the public, I believe. Madam Chair.
Alpers is the largest purchaser in California. And to note that we are equally delighted that you are using that purchasing authority to try and serve consumers better by standardizing benefit designs and assuring that the choices that consumers have are ones that are meaningful and that they can understand. We obviously have worked hard with you on those standard benefit designs and appreciate the choices you have made and your responsiveness to trying to act as the purchaser on behalf of consumers. We will look forward equally to working with you on the delivery system reform as we look at the population you serve, 95% of which is adults in these low and moderate income ranges. It seems to us a target-rich environment for meeting the quadruple aim of lower costs, better care, better health care system and improved health equity. Thank you.
Thanks, Beth.
Carrie Sanders with CPenn. Also, I want to congratulate you for surpassing CalPERS in terms of your enrollment numbers. Very exciting, and we're excited to hear about the new marketing contract and the real focus on targeted outreach and marketing specifically to ethnic communities of color. The numbers, I think, do seem very positive. So we're excited to see that. We look forward to working with you on delivery system reform. And, we think that your slide on the triple aim, in fact, you also do work on health equity as part of that already. So we kind of see that and see those values and look forward to thinking about how we can really transform how care is provided to the communities you enroll. Thanks.
Thanks, Carrie.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your time. My name is Tim Coxon, and I am president of NSYNC Consulting Services. We're a locally based, service-disabled, veteran-owned business, certified small business. And we are currently partnered with Faneuil, one of your vendors, to manage and operate the two call centers for the project itself. We have been supporting the project for the last 6 to 8 months, and over that time we have basically hired and onboarded over 1,000 people for the project to get it to the point where it is today. And not to sound arrogant, but I think between the two organizations and the Cover California staff have done a great job at it. We have been told over the last several weeks and months that there's a short-term contract extension coming down the pipeline. As of today, we being NSYNC have not heard of anything at this point. My concern with that is not necessarily our outcome of it, but more the people who are population we're trying to serve. Currently, we're servicing about 1,700 calls per day. And these, as you alluded earlier, these are crucial life-changing events that these people are going through. And our concern is that during this transition that has not been determined at this point, what is going to happen to the service levels? Are the call times going to go up? And as we know, the marketing has already started, so those calls are only going to go up.
Madam Chair and members, Elizabeth Landsberg with the Western Center on Law and Poverty and the Health Consumer Alliance. And as someone who's been to almost all of the Covered California board meetings, and I think we're all so focused on the nuts and bolts, I actually wanted to thank Director Lee for taking the time to sort of step back and tell that story. And it is remarkable to think about how far we've come in 18 months of providing coverage and to look at the delivery system, the real commitment to delivery system and access to services, and to see those numbers of preventive care. And also to say, and people may be surprised here, consumer advocates say we're happy there's a limit to the choices. When I think about trying to help people sort through 35 silver plans, that's just not a zoo. It's a totally chaotic zoo where the animals are running wild. So just want to congratulate the staff on the achievement. Thank you.
Thanks, Elizabeth. And I would point out that the PowerPoint that Peter prepared and spoke from is available on the website, so you can use it in your communications as well.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Betsy Emholtz for Consumers Union. As an organization who has previously expressed concern about special enrollment, I wanted to make sure to say the positive today, which is congratulations on those figures. We're doing so well on special enrollment, and we really appreciate that. In addition, I wanted to echo the comments that Elizabeth just made about appreciating that step back. It's so easy for us all to get caught in the day-to-day nuts and bolts and the problems and the practical details, and to step back and get that big picture is so important. There are a lot of accomplishments to tout, and we're glad you're going to tout them. And also the aspirations are there as well. And we really want to make sure that we continue to express those, because we've accomplished a lot, and the opportunities are also great, including on cost containment, delivery system reform, and reducing disparities. So Consumers Union looks forward to working with you in the future on those, too. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Betsy.
Let me just respond to a couple issues. If I could, first I want to underscore what Diana noted, which is these slides are available. And we welcome your thoughts and comments on other ways to tell our story. If there's other elements that we're missing, suggest. We want you to use your bully pulpits, and we will always using real facts and evidence. Everything we have out there has a data point that we cite. Kick our tires. Kick them hard. We're an evidence-based organization. Next, I could not more strongly affirm that health equity and addressing disparities of care is central to our mission. It's baked into our mission statement, and I absolutely agree that it's integral to the triple aim. When we talk about people getting the right care, that means the right care irregardless of income, language, cultural position. And so that's a central issue of what does it mean to get right care, but I appreciate it underscoring that. The issue about service center, the board just approved our doing a new RFP. The contract we had was a temporary contract. We have a new RFP that's going to be issued. I would note that our service levels today are at 94%, meaning 94% of our calls are being answered within 30 seconds. Quite honestly, that's too high. And you say, how could that be too high? But that means we have more people on the phone than we probably, quote-unquote, need. There's always going to be a balance we need to look at about what's the right mix, but having staff on the phone, both permanent full-time staff, which are committed to our state employees, but also the surge contract. And first, in this introduction, I want to note that Jim is going to be presenting PowerPoints, but these PowerPoints are reflected in a revision document, which is a large document which goes through in substantial detail what our budget is and why and what is behind it. Before going to that, though, I want to provide a broad introduction and framework, and which is how what we're doing frames our ongoing sustainability. And some of these material you've seen before, but I want to go quickly through this, which is to first... Where should I be pointing this? So, because part of this is our roadmap for the future. What guides where we're going? Our vision, which then is anchored in our mission and day-to-day strategy and values. Our vision, and this is the vision that was adopted by the board 3 years ago, is to improve the health of all Californians. Now, that's a big vision, but our mission is to improve health care quality, lower costs, reduce health disparities by empowering consumers. We are a consumer organization. That's our mission. That is what drives Covered California staff every day. We have identified with the board, charged us with six guiding values, the number one being that we be consumer-focused. Second, we look at affordability, always, that we seek to be a catalyst for improving care, that we operate with integrity, that we work in partnership with others. We cannot do what we're doing alone. And finally, that we be focused on results. Well, what does this mean organizationally? And these pillars you may see reflected in the discussion on the outward-facing sort of public speak, but we do this through five things, by having affordable plans that meet consumers' needs, by making sure those plans deliver needed care, by having effective outreach, by making sure consumers have a positive experience, and finally, by having an organization that operates with excellence. And this is some of the behind-the-curtain stuff of having 1,300 employees that are proud, excited contributors to the work we do every day. This is a piece that we continue to work on. As you hear Jim and a little bit of me talk about the budget, I want to highlight key initiatives and goals we have for the coming fiscal year. And these are elements that we welcome and encourage comment on. These will be shaped over the years to come because they will be changing in future years. But I want to, at a high level, walk through each of the five pillars that support our work. First, affordable plans. Our four key initiatives in this area are to continue to moderate trends for 2016 and 17. In 2015, rates through Covered California increased 4.2%. We think that was a good number. We are working right now to continue that trend moderation. We also want to leverage the data we have as we look at benefit design changes in the future. We made some important steps this year with regard to specialty drugs. We want to continue that effort. With regard to outreach and education, we want to build on our continued efforts to personalize our outreach and retention efforts. We want to more effectively convert Medi-Cal redeterminations into Cover California, where they're eligible. And we want to continue to make sure that we enroll and retain people as they reflect the diversity of those eligible for subsidies. We've done a pretty good job up till now. We want to make sure we continue to build on that. Positive consumer experience. We want to listen and learn from our members to improve CalHERS. Many of you are familiar with the 24-month roadmap. To improve our service at our service center. To make the enrollment process be smoother. And to continue to foster better language access and health insurance literacy. And finally, behind the curtains, we want to make sure that we walk the talk of our core values and that we continue to build our staff. Now, as we look ahead to the budget that Jim is going to run through, I want to highlight two of the changes that he will speak to that are different from what we proposed to the board last May. And these were commented on significantly by the board. I've had discussions with both some board members, and we've had engagement with a number of parties on two issues. First is on the Navigator funding and the structure of that funding for 2014-15 and 2015-16. And the second is our support for consumer assistance through the Health Consumer Alliance. And first, the comment that I'd make is one of thanks on a number of fronts. First, a range of Navigator organizations spent a lot of time and effort to provide very thoughtful comments to the staff and to the board. And I had the opportunity to talk with a number of those groups yesterday. I want to thank both them for their comments. But more importantly, I want to thank them and the many other groups who from day one have joined us in our mission to enroll all Californians. The insurance agents, the county eligibility workers, the many groups that have never been paid a dime but recognize that getting everyone in the doors takes more than a village. It takes a state with a common mission. That's part of why we've made history. And I want to thank all of you that have been part of that journey. Second, I want to do a brief reminder of our history of listening, learning, and revising what we do. In our first year, we funded outreach and enrollment through outreach and education grants and separate per-person payments for enrollment and renewals and significant enrollment through insurance agents. Year two, we changed. We learned from that. We had many comments that said that was too disjointed. We needed to bring things together. We launched a Navigator program that combined outreach education with financial support for enrollment and retention with performance-based payments that were triggered by per-person enrollment. During open enrollment, we changed that. We actually said we're going to significantly revise the Navigator program and pay 50% of the potential payments regardless of enrollment. We looked at the potential of adding or doing payments for renewal and found it would make an inconsequential difference. We also changed the payments to pay on enrollment, not on effectuated coverage, making substantial differences in what organizations received. In year three, and that was a board action that was made, a number of came through agents. About 13% of our enrollment came through enrollment direct with our service center. So I want to note that we've given very close consideration to the recommendations and comments made, and note that staff have heard these and have a couple reactions. First, we do not propose and recommend to the board changes in the 2014-15 payment structure for Navigators. We believe that the amendments made by the board were appropriate. We think that we've all learned in this process that it's fair compensation in many ways and not appropriate to change. But we also think that we are recommending a change in the budget to be approved, that we would seek board approval for funding Navigators up to $13 million, not the $10 million, which was bigger than the $5 million potential. This would be budget neutral to the bottom line because we would reduce funds otherwise that would have been available to our strategic infrastructure account. But I do want to note that this is not a commitment to spend $13 million. We would spend based on grantees applying that meet our performance criteria and the criteria for targeted regions and populations. We would hope we find $13 million worth of groups to fund. But it's not a commitment to fund a certain dollar amount. It's to fund groups that meet our criteria. Second, I want to respond to some of the issues, and again, the very well thought through comments from the navigators. There was a discussion of challenges, and I want to thank those that commented on the letter, but also we've had dozens of meetings, forums, and other places where we always look at our challenges to see how we learn and improve. We agree with many of the challenges noted, and we're looking how to improve as we go forward. Second, there was comments on marketing. I want to note that our new Navigator program allows navigators to spend money on marketing to promote enrollment at their events. We do not think it's appropriate to redirect funds from our recently awarded marketing partners, selected because of their expertise in doing outreach and marketing to diverse communities, to community organizations that may be very anchored in their local community, but we didn't do RFPs to select organizations based on their marketing expertise. So we respectfully don't agree with that change. One of the comments made was on burden and reporting. We are seeking to make the reporting burden on our grantees as little as possible, but I want to note that we take very seriously our obligation to make sure all the funds we administer are well spent. We are rightly under a microscope in the state and federally, and we need to make sure that funds that we administer are spent for the right purposes, but we absolutely look forward to working with our partners to see how we can reduce burden so money is spent on the ground. There was a comment with regard to our reporting of race, ethnicity, and other enrollment data. As many of you know, we believe in evidence, believe in sharing data, and we look forward to sharing far more robust data in the coming months of summer. Again, not on just enrollment, but on effectuated coverage, who got coverage where. So we welcome those comments, and it's something we will be very responsive to. And finally, with regard to suggestions with regard to staffing on disparities issues, affecting the diversity of our state, in the end, who do you hold to account to that? You hold to account myself and Yolanda Richardson, my chief deputy. That is central to our job. It's central to my job. Hold me out to that. But we are thrilled to have Jonathan on board. But this is something that we own as an organization because it is part of our success, part of the fabric of what we do. With regard to the Health Consumer Alliance, I want to note that many of you know that I come from a long background as an advocate. I take the role of both individual and systemic advocacy seriously and importantly. It is not a normal thing for an organization to fund organizations and individuals to advocate with that organization. We're at a launch, a new phase, where we said early on, as we get out of the gate, let's fund support for advocacy. We think it is equally important as we go forward to make sure always that issues get resolved at the lowest possible level. That's something that's core to our mission. We're going to look at continuing to do that. We are proposing to continue to contract with Health Consumer Alliance. We are proposing to increase the amount from the May recommendation to $1,375,000, an annual award for the next year or contract. And we look forward to reworking the scope with the partners there to reduce some of the scope of what they've done relative to systemic numbers. We actually have a good sense of our numbers. The value of what they brought in individual support is critical. We think it's important. We think this is something we need to continue to look at. We value that partnership, but we are recommending a change. And we do recognize it's a reduction from last year. It's a reduction in percentage similar to the reduction faced by the Navigator program. But again, we are making significant reductions in most organizations, elements of the organization. So with that, I wanted to give you that background, and Jim will now run through at a high level the overall budget that we're having before the board for potential action, and then we'll take board questions, comments, as well as comments from the public. Jim, can you take the next steps, please? Yep.
Thank you, Peter. Madam Chair, members of the board, glad to be here today to present the final budget for your consideration. Before I begin, I'd like to thank my staff and all of the other staff in Covered California that really helped all of the divisions pitched in to do this, particularly on my staff, Dora, Dennis, April, Juanita, Nick, Bill, Fop, Nithya, all of those folks contributed a significant amount to bring this together. We had many meetings, as I mentioned before, probably over 75 meetings, many hallway conversations, drop-in meetings to bring this budget together. And I think we've gone a long way to creating a lot of transparency for this organization, as Peter had identified the budget we produced in May. You know, this budget's a multi represents a multi-year strategy to bring the organization into meeting its ongoing operations. We've always planned to spend more in the beginning to for our branding, to build infrastructure, and build partnerships with other organizations. It also, this budget reflects the cost allocation plan for CalHERS and shows a significant reduction in features into alignment in as early as 17-18. And it really focuses on outreach, sales, marketing, and also some reorganizations to more effectively support our mission. So the budget we presented in May was about $333 million. Peter noted a couple of the changes we have. We're going to add about $2 million and then move money, a little bit of money between some programs. Overall, the budget will be $335 million. In addition, we looked at current year expenditures. We're going to spend a little less than we had anticipated, and ultimately this budget will increase reserves by about $4 million. We also took a look at our forecast. No significant changes that would warrant anything being changed at this time. We'll continue to look at the forecast as we move forward. Here, this slide identifies the changes. You can see by program the addition of about $2.1 million in the budget impact column, and then the transfers that are moving between programs. This provides the details of the additions. So we're adding about three positions to support the CalHERS project at the Service Center. We're adding $1.3 million to better support our small business areas and administrative efforts. And the item that Peter mentioned, $375,000 to support our consumer assistance. This slide identifies the transfers from programs and to programs. The item I'd like to highlight is we are providing a program oversight and compliance team. We're taking 24 positions that are scattered throughout our organization in various areas and pulling those together into the new program integrity division, and that's about $2.8 million that's being moved. We are also consolidating the appeals work in the Service Center. We've moved the staffing for that. The $7 million identified here would fund a contract with Social Services to do the appellate work for us. And as Peter noted, we are identifying about $3 million of our enterprise cost-sharing funds or our infrastructure funds that can be used for the Navigator program, and this would reduce that from about $10 million down to $7 million. A couple other small items. We are going to use some contract funds to fund a couple of positions to handle our all of our marketing, multiple delivery channels, YouTube, Ustream, things like that. I also wanted to highlight that the budget includes the budget that we provided in May includes $2.3 million for voter registration to meet our statutory and legal requirements, and that's to send notices when people identify that they would like one, and if they don't respond, we also send notices. The $2.3 million was the amount that we had funded in 14-15, and we carried that amount forward into 15-16. For our outreach, sales, marketing efforts, including $50 million for marketing campaigns and up to $13 million for the Navigator program. It provides $100 million for the Service Center, and we believe that we will be able to provide service levels that compare to the 14-15. Additionally, it funds the 24-month roadmap for CalHERS. At the last meeting, Board Member Feer brought up some an issue related to kind of the constraints on our budget. We wanted to bring forward for the new members a few of the code sections, just summary of those. And if you – this is riddled with limitations on using general fund. In addition, I wanted to highlight down below the bottom bullet, there's no authority in state law for us to issue any or for the treasurer or controller to issue any bonds for us. And really, this kind of gets to the size of the reserve that we're maintaining. I mean, we're out there by ourselves. I think it's prudent to maintain a sufficient reserve in case our forecasts are off or we have other budget pressures. But again, we do have many tools to either increase revenue, change the size of the reserve, or make expenditure reductions to manage the budget. Oops. Where are we? We'll get there. I can continue to talk. We are, geez. As you can see here in the second column under 1516, we have about $100 million of federal funds to expend next year. We will end this year, if you look at the year-end operating reserve for 1415, with about $300 million in reserves or federal funds that we can use. In 1516, we'll have about $200 million reserves, and then in 1617, 1718, above $150 million. It's important, I think, to note on this slide, if you look at the 1718, you can see that the revenue is about $303 million, with expenditures at $300 million. So that's where our revenues will exceed expenditures if everything goes as planned. So at this point, staff recommend that the board adopt a resolution to approve the budget for $340 million, authorize the director to make adjustments as necessary, and require adjustments to program budgets and positions be reported to the board.
Thank you, Jim. Excellent presentation. Are there any questions or comments from members of the board before we take public comment, or from you, Peter, if you have anything to add?
Nothing to add.
Veva. Member Islas.
Well, I really want to commend you, Peter, and staff for looking to find ways to reach an amicable, I think, decision in relation to the request to explore more funding.
And the Health Consumer Alliance. Last week, I got a call from someone from one of the hospital associations with a difficult covered California access issue. So I spent a little time talking to her on the phone, and then I referred her to the Health Consumer Alliance. That same morning, I got an email from one of the foundations saying they were having a hard time advising people going between Medi-Cal and Covered California, and could we do a conference call with them to explain how that's supposed to work? So Jen and I did a conference call that afternoon. I walked them through it, and then I said, but if you have problems, you should call the Health Consumer Alliance. I got an email from a friend whose son is very ill and is having trouble accessing care. So I offered to talk to her, but also of course, we'll refer her to the Health Consumer Alliance. So I really appreciated Peter's opening comments about the importance that independent consumer assistance plays. We appreciate also the recognition that the proposed funding level, we appreciate that the budget slides included the mission and the vision on slides 3 and 4, and also the guiding principles. And I think if you look at those guiding principles, you see how key independent consumer assistance is to almost all of those guiding principles. Being consumer-focused, making sure people can access affordable health coverage by making sure they get the right level of APTCs, public trust, reliability, welcoming partnerships, getting results. So we appreciate staff's recognition that the proposed funding level last month of $1 million was insufficient. We appreciate the proposed increase of $375,000. That does still represent a third decrease while we have the same level of enrollment. So we would urge the board to reconsider that level. You all are the ones approving the budget and can make adjustments, and we would urge your consideration of funding at the current level of $2 million to make sure that we can continue to assist consumers with the Covered California program. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon. Dorina Wong from Asian Americans Advancing Justice. And first, I would like to support the comments of Elizabeth Landsberg from Western Center in, you know, increasing the amount for the Health Consumer Alliance, because we actually work very closely with them and kind of recognize the importance of the services that they provide. So I'm going to speak on behalf, not only on behalf of our Advancing Justice LA Collaborative, but also on all the signatories of our May 29th letter, and also some other Navigator grantees that we've spoken with. And first off, Peter, I do want to thank you very much for meeting with us yesterday and, you know, taking the time, because we know how busy and crazy this all is, that, you know, to come up with some kind of amicable resolution. And let me just say that we appreciate that you took our concerns very seriously, and you addressed many of our recommendations, and appreciate the agreement on the data collection and the our commitment to address, like, the health disparities throughout the organization, and also the reduction in trying to work out some kind of reporting requirements. We really appreciate all of those acknowledgments. And I guess one question I would have is just, and also, of course, the increase in the allocation of the, you know, up to $13 million. And we certainly agree that this would only be if there are strong proposals, because we also have the common goal.
Say thank you to Director Lee and the board for listening to the comments of navigators and the consumer assistance folks who are on the ground providing a really valuable service, I think, to your members. The additional $345,000 for the consumer assistance is, you know, hopefully will be helpful. And, you know, I would agree with, you know, Elizabeth's comments that they are doing quite a bit of problem solving and dealing with complex cases, and would hope that you might at least be open to reconsidering, depending on looking at caseloads, looking at what it looks like next year. Similar with the Navigator program, the $3 million additional funding is really a great addition. There were some comments in some of the letters that you received that just I wanted to pull out in particular, and I think you addressed these as well, but you know, making sure that navigators can use some of their that there's some funds available for them to do their own marketing, I think that would be helpful. It's not really an apples to apples comparison with the CECs and agents, because agents are, you know, marketing for themselves or in business. They have a little bit more of a plan in that sense, perhaps. And so to really help the navigators and nonprofits to really figure out how to get the word out and to be out in the community, I think would be helpful. And then also just to make sure that the find help near you, that ability to go onto your website, to be able to find that assister in your area who can help you, that works with a nonprofit. Again, you know, people will be driven to your website through your ads, through all the marketing that you're doing, and then hopefully we'll be able to find out the information and connect with that assister near them. So thank you.
Thanks, Carrie.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, board members. Kim Lewis from the National Health Law Program and the Health Consumer Alliance. First, I want to congratulate and commend Peter and his staff for an impressive budget overall. And it's been a long time coming, and this is an important day, I think, assuming you're going to support the budget today, of a self-sustaining exchange, which is quite impressive. We also want to thank you for considering the the efforts to increase the Health Consumer Alliance budget and the $375,000, I think it was, increase to that amount. But three quick points about that. One is, as Elizabeth mentioned, it's about a 30% or 31% decrease over last year. And so we do want to say, unlike, I think, staffing reductions that aren't in your budget, this will result in some staff decrease. So I don't want to say that that's not true for the budget overall. And secondly, I know the reduction is similar to the one that you've put forward on the navigators, but I would say that unlike the role of the navigators, the consumer assistance programs are really involved to maintain coverage and to assist people in getting into the right program. Unlike, you know, enrollment, this is where people have tried to get help through the consumer, through the service centers that you are funding and through the navigators. And so we're really helping people where they run into a lot of trouble. And so they're complex cases, as you know, and take a lot of hours of work, continue to move back and forth and need a lot of assistance in ensuring that they don't have a gap in coverage, which our offices provide a fair amount of work on. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Kim.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Board Members. Julianne Broyles here on behalf of the California Association of Health Underwriters. First of all, we want to say how much we appreciate the story of the accomplishments and how proud we are to have been part of that success with our enrollment levels that we were able to bring to the exchange. Just a few things, and I'll be as brief as I can. First of all, we do always appreciate the metrics that the board provides in the meeting materials and in other places, but we would like to see frequently, more avenues of assistance, the metrics on that, where are they coming in the special enrollment process, in the regular enrollment process, and through Medi-Cal enrollments in those avenues. We are, more importantly, asking the board to review its position on payments for the Medi-Cal assistance enrollments that our agents have been performing. As your slide 31 on the executive director's report indicated, we have been a very viable channel for those enrollments. We have been doing those since our contract began with Covered California. That has, I think, shown again in the amount of commissions paid or payments made through both avenues, show that we're a pretty large source of those enrollments. To have them end at the end of this month and still be required to make those enrollments through the no wrong door policy of the board and in a sense work for free when other entities are going to be paid for the same work, we think is a legal inequity and would ask you to consider that position going forward. And last, on the issue of Medi-Cal, our agents have found, and as I've mentioned before, agents are OCD people. They like to help people. They solve problems every day for millions of Californians with their health care, Medi-Cal, or with their health insurance plan. We think it would be very helpful to convene a group of stakeholders, including the county offices and our members and others who would like to participate, to talk about how we can further help those we have helped with their Medi-Cal enrollments. We find it very frustrating, again, to find that we've helped somebody gain coverage through Medi-Cal but are unable to help them past that point. Thank you.
Thanks, Julianne.
Hugo Morales, Director of Radio Bilingüe. First of all, I just want to commend Peter for that story. We do hear from our listeners testimonials of how coverage and health insurance is a life changer, how they appreciate that, and then, you know, real stories about how, you know, it would have been an insurmountable medical bill has turned out to be like something a few hundred dollars for the family. So I just want to bring that, what we hear from our listeners. And also I just want to commend the commission for allocating possibility of more resources for navigators, as I stated at the last meeting. That's what we're hearing from our listeners. They really appreciate that person-to-person communication and assistance, and also for the advocacy resources. And I think also the Kaiser family study, as noted by Peter.
Betsy Emholtz for Consumers Union. First, congratulations on this new budget with self-sustainability. It is impressive, and it's something to be proud of. And also thanks for finding some additional funds to restore some of the cuts to both the Navigator and the Health Consumer Alliance programs. Consumers Union doesn't get funds, as you know, as a Navigator or as a consumer assister, but we do get calls on occasion, and we send them to the Consumer Alliance. We've had a couple that we've sent, very complicated problems, transitions between Medi-Cal and Covered California, for example. They've handled those problems well, and it's great to have that assurance of somebody there with the expertise. And we know from, I know from my prior life before Consumers Union, that staffing up and getting staff expertise on these complicated issues is difficult. So if there's any way to find more to continue that, we would so much appreciate it. These are complicated problems, particularly for the Consumer Alliance. Our business is getting people enrolled, but it's also keeping them happy, getting them enrolled in the right place and keeping them. And we think that both the Health Consumer Alliance and the Navigators help perform both those functions. Thank you.
Thanks, Betsy.
Hi, I'm Anthony Wright with Health Access California. First of all, just to support, I think, what was the clear articulation of both those consumer principles and enrollment goals at the beginning that we support. We also want to support the request by Western Center with regard to the Health Consumer Alliance. And I think the broader issue around marketing, outreach, and enrollment, which obviously is a really big part of the budget, but does see a significant reduction. And we do fear that is letting off the gas a little bit at a time when we still need effort. And so we want to have an ongoing look at that moving forward. It is critical. We're glad that we have some new partners in the world of communications, earned and paid media and marketing. We look the marketing enrollment and outreach committee advisory committee looks forward to meeting with them and engaging with them on July 14th. And we hope that there's an opportunity that if there's good ideas and creative suggestions that come out of that process and that conversation, that there is the opportunity for that investment moving forward. I think that it is really important that this that we get this right. And if there's more investment, we need to. Let me just be clear. Sustainability for this organization, I think this budget shows, sustainability is not a question, despite what Obamacare opponents say. You have more than a critical mass to be sustainable. You have reserves, and I think investments in marketing and outreach and enrollment only help your reserves and your long-term sustainability. And so we hope that there's some sort of maybe evidence-based trigger that if there are issues with enrollment levels going forward, that there is an opportunity to make those investments and do the creative things that may need to be done, whether it's in special enrollment periods or otherwise, to make sure that we're going forward and have sustainability in the long term. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Anthony. We have one caller. Operator, would you open the line, please?
Certainly. That is Edward Barrera with Consumer Watchdog. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Hi. First, I'd like the registration doesn't work. The system can just simplify the process by keeping people on the site and auto-filling the voter form with the personal information it already has. This is a simple change, and it would make it much easier for Californians to register to vote. We did note in Mr. Lee's response that he suggested that we participate in the 1296 stakeholder process, which is intended to provide a forum to discuss suggestions on how to enhance and simplify CalHEARS, among other things. We thank him for that suggestion. But nothing will change unless the board and staff show a commitment to change. We've heard concerns by consumer advocates about the lack of transparency and stakeholder engagement in setting the policies and priorities regarding CalHEAR changes. It's also difficult to be a part of any discussion when we don't have all the current information. We understand that California plans to spend $2.3 million, which is in the budget, towards voter registration, and we've been told that there's no plans for any changes on the website. The revised budget says the health exchange is using those funds to, quote, conform with current law. The funds include $1.4 million for mailing and postage, and the rest is intended for the policy unit, we've been told. No documents have been offered to tell us exactly what the latter means, and the itemized line for voter registration is still zeroed out. basically, from what we can tell at this point, there's no policy change, no enhancing the voter registration webpage, and no trying to keep enrollees on the site instead of sending them to the Secretary of State site. In other words, the status quo, unless there's something the public doesn't know.
Excuse me. I appreciate your call very much and your comments, and we've got the we understand your comments. There is a 2-minute limit that I know is very difficult to follow when you're on the call, but the 2 minutes expired about a minute ago. I'll just add this: we just want to know
what the 2.3. We just want the details of the 2.3 million, and we just ask the board to commit to making the voter registration page easier by keeping enrollees on the site and auto filling the form. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anything else, Peter, in response? Yeah.
The one thing that I'd like to respond to in particular is the issue raised by Julian Broyles on payment and non-payment on Medi-Cal, but also the big change we have going forward in 2016 is with the change in Navigators, the only payments we'll be doing for Cover California is through the Navigator program. We have throughout California, I believe, over 6,000 individuals who are certified enrollment counselors. They will still be able to enroll people. Many will not be part of Navigator organizations, and we will support their enrollment, but we will not be able to pay for it. We have never been the source of payment for Medi-Cal enrollment. That's a DHCS source of payment. The issues of how to deal with single streamlined application of single point of entry as a policy issue, we absolutely need to take up and bring back to the board, and how to make sure that's dealt with fairly across the board. But the issue of enrollment is one we need to look at very closely.
Thank you. Are there any other comments from members of the board? I would entertain a motion to adopt the resolution enacting the budget for 15-16.
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Any further comment? Call the roll. Fuhrer?
Aye.
Islas?
Aye.
Morgenstern?
Aye.
The chair is aye. Is there any further business to come before the board? Thank you all very much. On to another successful year.